Today on Movie Rollouts, we review The Book Thief and Philomena. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you.
The cat's here.
I know, yes. You can tell it's time for Movie Rollers. The cat arrived up on the table. Hello, Minnie. She's fascinated by the microphone today.
She is.
Instead of Yazdi's notes.
I'm mildly offended, yes. She's shunning me today.
Well, I'm all excited because Rashmi and I travel in a couple of days' time.
Yes, we do.
To Paris.
Paris.
Gay Paris for...
French movies.
Yeah, well, you can watch Blue is the Warmest Colour.
Oh, my God.
Again.
La Vie d'Adèle.
La Vie d'Adèle in 70mm.
There you go.
Is it? Was it shot in 70mm?
No.
Oh.
You got excited then.
I know,
like, wow. Two women in 70mm.
There's even more detail to make out.
Well, by the way, I know this is not a podcast about Blue is the Warmest Colour, but when it was first shown at Cannes, everybody said there's that first sex scene is 20 minutes long, but it's actually only 9 minutes long.
And I heard everyone clapped right at the end.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of physical prowess. I mean, it's like they made it to the finish line.
I have my own thoughts about that, but that's a different type of podcast.
Okay. Wow, that movie gets double coverage on Movie Rollers.
I know.
We can't stop thinking about it. All right, well, let's move on to this week's movies. What would you like to cover first?
Let's do Philomena.
Okay.
Okay, a world-weary political journalist picks up a story of a woman's search for her son who was taken away from her decades ago after she became pregnant and was forced to live in a convent. This is directed by Stephen Frears and written by Steve Coogan, Jeff Hope, and it's actually based on a book that... The real, I guess, I can't remember his name.
Martin Sixsmith
actually wrote. So with that, this stars Judy Dench, Steve Coogan, Sophie Kennedy Clark, and many others. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
This movie was strangely affecting. I mean, it really kept me guessing as to what was going to happen. And what was interesting to me was that there were two main protagonists here. We had the Judy Dench character, who, you know, the movie is about ostensibly, but... Then you have this whole kind of second story with the Martin Sixsmith character in terms of his relationship with her, how he is really much of a, you know, he's kind of a douchebag at the beginning of the movie, really trying to exploit the situation. But you see his journey as well in kind of the second part of the movie, where he develops a genuine interest as a journalist, not somebody who's just exploiting the situation for his own kind of, you know, fame and benefit as a journalist. So, I really liked it for all of those reasons. It was an intriguing story and kind of a shocking thing. Made me really angry about having gone to Catholic school.
We debated on the car on the way back. Yazdi, about Catholicism, not about the film.
Yes.
Not breaking any
rules.
You didn't
break the rules, okay. I think Philomena is just a film done right. And I'm going to pause at that. I mean, I think there's so few movies these days which are done right, and this is a movie done right. And I think this is a great example of the importance of tone, and I think the value of restraint. I mean, I think when you're making a movie based on a true story, and I didn't know that this movie was based on a true story until the end credits, I think what you hold back is often more important than what you show. And I think there's something about this, the way the whole movie has been made, which is very professional and very classy and very intelligent, even though the characters necessarily aren't classy or intelligent or professional. But I think there is a hardworking rigor to it, and it just worked for me. You know, some movies you kind of win over towards the end. It you know, it had me won over in like the first 5 minutes.
So I think, like you said, Yazdi, if it wasn't actually based on a true story, which we only find out at the end unless you know anything about Philomena, I would have said that this is a really far-fetched idea that asks you to take a huge leap of faith to believe it. I think it's a sweet yet sad movie, which kind of seems to be the theme at this time of year. I think although well acted, I actually found Judy Dench a little annoying. And that may be because I think the real character was annoying. But Joe, like you said, I think Steve Coogan as a character is really great. Now, we know Steve Coogan because we lived in the UK and he's a great comedian. I think overall for me, though, the movie ended up being a little dull because it was too linear and a little bit manipulative.
Huh.
Manipulative in what sense?
So I didn't like the way... I don't want to give away a spoiler. So there's one theme in the movie that I feel... Really? Like, that was gonna be the way it ends? And I felt like it purposely pulled on our heartstrings. And like I say, if it wasn't based on truth, I would think, really? But it is based in truth, so I have to kind of give it some credence. But I just felt like it was a little bit manipulative. And I just feel like... At times, it was too coincidental.
But it's based on a true story.
I know. I think that's what I'm struggling with.
I know what you're saying. For example, the scene in the airport where, you know, they're all set to get on a plane and then there's a turn in the events.
Right, or they're viewing some video footage or a photograph and...
I presume there hasn't been too much license that they've taken. Or maybe they have, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, it is based on a book by, you know, an investigative journalist who I think likes to sensationalise things.
Right.
But, I find it hard to knock that. I mean, I think, let's talk about Judi Dench if we can, because you mentioned that you thought she was a bit annoying here. I think in part that's because Judi Dench is always such a strong character. We know her as M from, you know, James Bond. You know, we know her as the Queen. Not the Queen.
Victoria in Elizabeth.
Yeah, okay. So she has played...
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah,
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's why I thought of her.
It wasn't Elizabeth. Shakespeare in Love.
Huge, very big, bold characters, and here she's playing an ordinary, not too bright kind of character. Here, I mean, this is somebody who definitely allowed themselves to be manipulated, and you can understand that she has her own kind of set of rules about the way the world works, and about her faith, and about how. She really puts herself to blame for a lot of what happened to her, even though what happened to her, I think, was clearly a result of an abuse by the nuns who were there to handle her situation for getting pregnant at a young age. But that might be why you found her performance a little off, because it's hard to buy Judi Dench as this meek, not very intelligent character. Really? I think it's hard. You know, one of the things about acting is that, you know, I can't remember who said this, but an actor can fake everything apart from intelligence. And for somebody to play an intelligent character, they have to have a basic level of intelligence. Well, here's kind of the opposite situation where we have somebody who we know of as being very intelligent. And I don't quite buy her little dumbed down approach,
but she's not, so she's of a certain generation and has the values of that generation. But I think the movie, especially in the second half, makes it clear that she's not as simple as we think she is, that she actually is pretty mature in her emotional thinking.
Not
about her own life, but about the life of others.
Yeah, and again, I keep coming back to if this really wasn't based on a true story, I just feel like the character didn't behave the way the character was set up to behave. And so I found it strange when she made a decision to do A, B, or C, because it wasn't in line with what you would expect that character to do in a sense. And that's fine if you're putting in twists and turns, but it didn't feel true to the character itself if she'd had that life, I guess. So that's where the main problems for me occurred. Other than that, I think it was a very British movie. It was a very English movie. And I'm not sure... And Yazdi, you know, you... Obviously, you know, you're more in tune with the... You know, you speak with us a lot. But how did that come across to you? Did it bother you?
It didn't bother me at all. I didn't have, like, compared to, like... The Full Monty.
Yeah, or Snatch.
Or Snatch, or even Trainspotting, where I'm like, what did I see? I didn't understand a word of what they were saying. This didn't bother me at all.
Okay.
I mean, I was never struggling. It didn't even seem particularly British to me, other than the fact that both the characters were British.
Yeah.
But a lot of the movie, a majority of the movie is shot happens in the US.
Right, right.
Going back to Judi Dench, though, I mean, I didn't have the same problem that you had in kind of having her pretend to be less intelligent than she is in real life. But I could honestly watch the camera on Judi Dench's face for 3 hours. I mean, I think even the greatest actor of our time, Meryl Streep, when she's acting, you know she's acting. You know that she knows that the camera is watching her.
Hmm.
But there's something so open about Judi Dench that when the camera is on her, you don't feel that she knows that the camera is there. I don't know. There's something very open and very, very clean.
Yeah, no,
there's very clean about the emotionality on her face. And I really bought...
It's not just her face, it's her eyes.
Maybe it's her eyes. I don't know. But I mean, I felt that even for the Marigold Hotel, where I thought she was so good in that. I mean, I would be very surprised if she didn't get Best Actor
it's
nomination
so annoying.
For this.
Yeah, everything she does, she gets nominated.
But there's a reason for it.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm just sour grapes. yeah. I think Steve Coogan actually gave a really good performance.
Yeah.
That was a very natural performance to me. Because it never seems like he's acting.
Yeah.
He just seems like that's who he is. And then the other thing I wrote down was, I think this had a lovely score. Although it seemed very Harry Potter-esque. I kept almost expecting, you know, like an Ex Libris Lamaris or something, and you know, broomsticks, but I did like the score.
I noticed it, which I don't think is a good thing. It jumped out to me as well, especially at the beginning of the movie, where it almost there was nothing going on that would justify
right.
the boldness of the music
right.
at that point in time. But
I didn't even notice the score, yeah.
So I noticed it, but only in a bad way.
I don't know, and going back to what you said earlier, Rashmi, I mean, I think this film or this story has the recipe for like a schmaltzy, overly sentimental, preachy story. But I think the movie, for the most part, sidesteps every one of those situations. I mean, you know, it doesn't linger on. It doesn't say, you know, you're an audience member, you need to cry now. You know,
it's nicely judged.
Yeah, it could have so easily been like television movie of the week.
With moments of comedy, and I think that's kind of what I think gives the movie its correctness in tone.
I think that's what saved it.
There are points when it can get heavy and you get a real genuine laugh. You know, usually from something that the Steve Coogan character says here. I mean, he's a comedian, obviously has great comedic timing, but, you know, his role here isn't to be, you know, the Joker. He has a very serious part to play in the story, but the movie avoid being overly heavy in what could have been, you know, a very dark, is a very dark tale and a very heavy movie. So it brings with it that lightness and tone.
I mean, Stephen Frears, who directed this, I mean, he's been directing movies for, I don't know, 20, 30 years now. I mean, he knows cinema, I think. And I think it's the tone of this movie ultimately which carries it.
Okay. Yeah. Wind up. Joe, you go first.
So overall, I mean, this is a movie I would recommend to absolutely everybody. You know, there's not a person on the planet who enjoys movies that I think would not get something from this film. The story is a fascinating one, even more so by the fact that it's true, or at least has, you know, elements of truth. You never know what people do with actual truths when they come to the screen. But nonetheless, it's a fascinating story about a fascinating character played very well by Judi Dench. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, as movie genres go, the road trip movies or the road movies is one of, I have a soft spot for that genre. And I like that this movie completely sidesteps the cliche of the road movie while being, for the most part, a road movie. You know, you don't even realize until... I didn't even realize until I was writing my notes that, oh, this was a road movie. So, good for them. I mean, what do I say? I mean, what a lovely, funny, sad, authentic little movie it is. And like you, Joe, I would, without hesitation, like if somebody came up to me and asked me, you know, year-end movie, you know, what movie should I watch at the end of the year? This one will come off my mouth the first, you know, Philomena. I can recommend it to anyone, you know, as against, say, 12 Years a Slave or, you know, something else. I think it gives intelligent cinema a good name. I give it 8 out of 10.
Okay. So even if you didn't love the movie like I didn't love the movie, I think you'll find this movie to be a good narrative on class, culture, sex, and religion. And for that reason alone, I give it 7 out of 10.
There was no sex in this movie. Blue is the warmest color.
Another I was thinking reference. Like sex before marriage.
Okay, I know.
Yeah. Joe? No, I mean, it was great. I mean, I think it reminded me of the trauma that was Catholic school. I'm not Catholic. I went to Catholic school, and I remember...
That explains a lot, right?
I know, right? I mean, that really confused... What a way to confuse a kid, send them to Catholic school without being Catholic. But, I mean, I think it really did capture, in many ways, the attitude of some of the more... You know, I don't want to make this a debate on religion, but some of the more intense... believers in the Catholic faith and how easily that faith can be manipulated to the harm of people. I mean, all the downsides of religion. Anyway, let's move on to movie number two of the week, which is The Book Thief, and I will briefly introduce that. This movie is directed by Brian Percival and is based on an international best-selling book of the same name, The Book Thief. And it's essentially about a young girl who was sent to live with a foster family during World War II. And she is intrigued by the only book that she brought with her. So she begins collecting books wherever she can find them. With the help of her new parents and a secret guest under the stairs, she learns to read and creates a magical world that inspires them all. So that's really the log line from the studio on this one. The movie stars Sophie Nellis as the main character, but has Jeffrey Rush, Emily Watson, and others. So, Yasti, what did you think of The Book Thief?
The one word that came to my mind after having seen the movie... The Book Thief was handsome. You know, this is a very handsomely made film. You know, I mean, it's really jaw-droppingly beautiful to look at. And, you know, I'm not familiar with the book on which it is based, but, you know, the entire movie has this very burnished walnut kind of sheen about it. It almost seems at times like a fairy tale. And I think that's intentional, although it has some very adult themes. And towards the end of the movie, it reaches for some really big themes about life and death and so forth. And while those did not necessarily all work for me, I found plenty to love about the movie.
I had almost the same words. I mean, I'm a little bit conflicted by this movie because it's sweet and charming and funny at times, but the situation it's based in is awful. That said, I did enjoy watching the movie at the time, although it feels more like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale to me, with a definite holiday feel. The movie, I think, is a little bit too precious overall, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's my main sentiment about the movie. It's a little too sweet. I wouldn't call it precious. It's too sweet given the nature of some of the themes that it explores. And it may be because it's being seen through the eyes of a young girl who doesn't really understand the gravity of the situation and the world that she's in. So I enjoyed the movie. I think, again, it's a matter of tone here, right? I mean, just how we spoke about tone in the other movie. This movie's tone and its theme don't, you know, there's a disconnect there, which is kind of annoying to me as a movie watcher, but doesn't stop the movie from being, you know, an enjoyable experience.
So it's interesting you say that, because Stephen Rea, I was reading Rotten Tomatoes, Stephen Rea, he was a writer for the Philly Inquirer, and he's written that the Holocaust has never looked so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with that. That's the problem I think I had with it. And it's rather like when we spoke about Django Unchained, when we did our 12 Years a Slave review. I don't know how I feel about a handsome movie being made about the Holocaust, because that's really what the underlying theme is about. That's what set up the situation.
But another quote, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes' website here, is, you know, it's like The Sound of Music without the music. I mean, which is really, it's a mean quote. But I understand what he's saying here, yeah. Right? I mean, you know, The Sound of Music is also about a very horrific period in human history, and yet we all see it as this wonderfully joyful movie.
That's so true.
Although the Sound of Music, that portion doesn't, the darkness doesn't come through till almost the very end.
I know.
This one, it's there from the start.
Right.
I know. But I kind of get the point that's being made there.
I mean, there's so many good things about this, you know. I mean, Yazdi, you said that it's beautiful. I think the cinematography is just amazing. And I never notice things like cinematography, but there are some scenes that are just like photographs, just stunning. And I think, again, this is one where the score really stood out to me. It's had a beautiful score that really added to that beautiful cinematography. It really created this beautiful feeling that I'm so conflicted about.
I mean, honestly, the first 5 minutes of the movie, I mean, my jaw was on the floor because it was so beautiful. I mean, the images after images are just so good. And considering that the movie is set during the Nazi time, I mean, the production values on all of that stuff, you know, there's, you know, it's pretty impactful.
And of course, the fact that we were watching it in Sinopolis, which is, you know, the recliner chair, creme de la creme of cinemas, with our strawberry milkshakes in hand, helped the movie along. But I mean, it was gorgeous. What a gorgeous feeling it was.
I'll go on, please. I want to go on.
I mean, one real problem I had with the movie was its use of language.
Yes,
it really bugged me that some people spoke German and other people spoke German spoke English, pretending it to be German with a German accent. So that was really bothersome to me. It's you kind of have to have it one way or the other. You can't have them singing in German in one scene and then switch them talking in English. We know that they were meant to be German in Germany, but it was annoying in that regard.
I agree.
I mean, I think more than anything else, the one thing I liked about this movie is that it's successful at doing something that I think almost no other movie has been able to do so far. And just bear with me while I talk through this, which is that, you know, when you're transferring something from the page to the screen, usually cinema as a medium opens up infinite possibilities, right? It really frees somebody in terms of the creative process. But there are a few instances where actually cinema becomes limiting, where actually the visual medium limits you. And one of the places where it limits you is in depicting the act of writing, for example. You know, it's very difficult to show somebody writing in a movie because it's boring watching somebody write. And so very often movies about writers tend to be kind of flat. And, you know, either somebody can choose to have, like in The Great Gatsby, you know, words actually fly off the screen, you know, and then it just comes off looking silly. But I think the one thing this movie does really well, and I got goosebumps actually, is in conveying the value of words.
Yes.
You know, and again, it sounds schmaltzy and corny even as I'm saying it, but there's a whole middle section of the movie where it demonstrates how words and the power of words actually save somebody's life. You know, somebody who cannot see the world from outside, somebody else describing things to him, how intensely powerful that is. And as me personally, as somebody who really believes in the power of words, I was really very happy with how well the movie kind of conveys this.
I agree with you. I typed more vigorously when I came home that night. But I agree with you, Yazdi. It's very poetic. Mm-hmm. It's a very poetic movie. But the other thing I want to say is, you know, whoever cast Sophie Nalisse as Liesl deserves a huge pat on the back. This is a really well-cast young person for this role. I was mesmerized by her on screen. And apparently she's only been in one other film, which is Monsieur Lazare, which I haven't seen but I've heard is really good. Movie. So she's in that movie
French
as well.
Movie, yeah.
But I was blown away by her. I mean, she made Geoffrey Rush look amateurish.
Really?
I feel.
I thought Geoffrey Rush was terrific. He always is.
He's always terrific. But, I mean, she stole the show.
I think the fact that she can hold her own against an actor of that caliber just goes to kind of illustrate your point. I mean, I don't think his performance is anything other than spot on here. He's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
And Emily Watson. I mean, you know, she used to be like the love interest in movies 10 years ago, and now Hollywood insists on frumping her up and making her like, you know, somebody's mother. She was like that in The War Horse, and now she's here again playing this frumpy... I mean, she's very nice, very effective in her role, but, you know, somebody, come on, please, give her a role where she can be...
Yeah, they've probably told her to lose 20 pounds, and she won't, so, you know, you get frumped.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's disgusting. Okay.
She's making a career choice. She wants to be a serious actress. She doesn't want to be seen that way anymore.
But she was in Breaking the Waves. I mean, she was... She defined, you know, film actors of a generation at a point, and it hurts me to see her relegated to, you know, mom roles, but anyway...
Okay, anything else? My sister and niece thought this was the best movie they'd ever seen in their life. Oh, yes, we should talk about that.
They were like, anyway, please.
Yes, no, they were blown away. They loved this movie so much. And I think it's got a lot to do with expectations. They don't go to the movies often, and I think when they do go, they like romantic comedies or action. So I think this was they were blown away by the fact that this was a cerebral movie that they actually enjoyed.
I actually think this movie is going to do very well commercially because, I mean, I think your sister and your niece were representative of the general audience. There was a lot of sobbing in this movie. I mean, even when we came out of the movie and I was waiting outside because a few people had gone to the restroom or whatever, everybody was coming out like in tears, like with circles under their eyes and like red bloodshot eyes. So I think this movie is going to tap into people's heartstrings.
Oh, and it did mine. Well. I mean, yeah. I was crying.
Oh, okay.
Mainly because my strawberry milkshake had ended. But no, I'm kidding. I was a very emotive movie. Mm. You're looking like you were manipulated.
No. I mean, I don't think I was affected at all by the movie.
Mm. I wasn't either. Yeah.
And I think... I wanted to be.
Yeah. And I think what did it for me was that pseudo father-daughter relationship between Jeffrey Rush and Liesl. I mean, that just really got under my skin. So, you know, that was good. Anything more? Or okay. Yazdi.
Yeah, I think this movie is going for that big, epic, sprawling feeling. And like I said before, I think I might be in a minority in thinking that it's not really 100% successful in going for that. You know, it's not like Cinema Paradiso, it is not. But even then, I think this is a very well-made movie. And for the most part, it has its heart in the right place. It's got good actors, a good story. It's honest. It might be a little too shiny and gleaming for my own taste for that particular story. But like I said, I suspect it's going to be kind of a sleeper hit. I give it somewhere between a 6 and a 7 out of 10. I'll be generous and give it a 7.
Joe.
Which I'll counter with a 6, simply because I was wholly unaffected by this movie. I think it was almost felt like a children's movie at times.
Yeah, it felt like a fairy tale, yeah.
Yeah, and but not even...
Not in
a good sense, right? It just felt like a movie that was... obviously seen through the eyes of this little girl, and I don't know whether the book is a children's book or whether it's a book for adults, I don't know. But... It just had the wrong kind of tone for me to really connect with it in a meaningful way. But that said, you know, I do accept that, you know, Rashmi, your sister and your niece had a wonderful time in this movie. So perhaps I'm being a little too snarky and cynical with my reviewer's hat on. So 6 out of 10, but, you know, it's a nice movie. No.
6.5.
Six out of 10.
Joe, come on. Add the half.
I'm not giving anybody a half. There are integers. It's a 10-point linear scale.
I did enjoy this movie a lot in the moment, and I think you will too. I just had a real problem with the tone, which seemed all over the place. A lot of themes that didn't quite come together and unexpected twists and turns that I couldn't quite put my finger on. I don't know whether it was trying to be a feel-good movie or a feel-bad movie, because I felt bad some of the time. I just feel a little bit confused overall. But I enjoyed it. 7 out of 10. I would probably give this one a 6.5 if halves were allowed.
What is wrong with you people?
Because
What would you give it out of 4 if you had 4 stars?
2 and 1/4.
2 and 3/4. Like, it's not quite 3, but it's...
Who's
not...
Who ever heard of a 3/4 of a star?
Yazdi's with me.
All right, mail@movieworld.com. Tell these idiots that I work with that there's a 10-point scale. Twitter.com/moviewallers, Facebook.com/moviewallers as well. I guess until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.